Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. It's coming up on 20 into the third hour, and Casey's looking to raise Sean Clancy. I mean, Sean expected me, you know, at least a half an hour ago, maybe 45 minutes ago. So Case, if you're having trouble with reaching him, he might have a few things going on. I'm going to certainly put the Jack Fisher win from yesterday on the side here. Case will let me know. All right. Let me slip in yesterday's results and tell you, how about Cassie winning this the feature yesterday with anticipation? It is so crazy. You had all those horses scratch, and it's one of those situations where you have more than one horse scratch, and even if it's just one horse, you got to go back and look at how it's going to affect the pace scenario. And you know, if there's two horses that figure to be on, you know, on the front end, and one of them scratches, suddenly there's lone speed. Not that entirely what happened here, but Boppy O got a very confident ride from Dylan Davis, you know, back from his little suspension, and 23-1, crazy, and it did set up a situation where we could have had a carryover. And that, how about the Chad Brown horse in that maiden claimer going off at 13-2? How did this horse pay $15? Crazy. Just crazy. Because, I mean, there were only really three serious horses to consider in this thing. And for basis risk to be that price was a little nuts. The rest of it was, you know, fairly mundane, although the even money double shot got beat in the eighth. Yeah, otherwise it was pretty formful. I mean, I wasn't a bad day of racing. You had that, how about that first time starter in the second race? I'm Nervous Now. This was Sappy Joseph and a Animal Kingdom filly. And here was a situation where you were looking for a fresh face. You know, that was one of those groups that you think, there's nobody here that's so scary. So that's always, and actually the public bet that horse. I mean, she ended up going off at 3-1. I think I hear Sean.
I'm here. Good morning. I just been waiting for the call for 45 minutes.
What
in the world? I know it's late in the meet, and they just put Sean on hold. I'm good. I got nothing better to do.
I'm just happy you're still here.
Yeah, I know. It's a shocker, isn't it?
Well, oh boy! All right, let's. Do I got to slap you around here or what?
No, I've had plenty of that, Melina.
Exactly. First of all, I was saving the Jack Fisher result from yesterday in that allowance, and Jack gets off the duck just in time.
Oh, come on! Now he was off the duck with snap decisions. Be careful.
Oh, that's true. That's you're right.
You're right.
Come on. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Jack. He finished strong. It obviously snap decision win the Shepherd and proven innocent won yesterday. Cool horse had a rough trip the first time up here. Beautiful ride by Jamie Bargery, and cool horse. You know, got that old Phipps. Janny Blood, it's fun to see him win.
Absolutely, and with you know, real authority. This one yesterday too, yeah. The right and snap and so how many more? Where's my? Let me see. Where's today? Where's today's stake?
Got one more jump race today. The Mickey Walsh Nava Stake that was rescheduled from last week. Got seven for it. Good competitive race. Hopefully, you know, we'll end on a good, strong note for Steeplechase. You know, the racing is strong this year. It's been, that was a good meet.
Agreed. And I had Leslie Young on last week, Sean, who's had just such a fabulous season. It's Leslie that is looking to get a win here before we adjourn. And she's got quite a few chances, actually, today in this spot.
It's a competitive race. I mean, if you look, there's some horses that have come over that haven't quite shown form yet. There's a couple. Freddie Flincher's very good. He's won his last two. Thought his allowance race is impressive. Proven Innocent was second to him. Obviously, that form was franked yesterday. Scorpion's Revenge is very good. I like Zero Skip, the first spot up here, going 2 1/16. Weighted for 2 3/8, which should suit him. If you look at his form from the spring and even last fall, you know, he looks a little more stamina type horse. He should run well. Leslie's taking a crack with Fast Vision. Comes out of a handicap at Nashville. Perfect Tapatino was a little disappointing in the Kaiser. Oh, they didn't run too bad. Got some old back class to him. Lidford comes back after finishing fifth in the Kaiser. He's been to Royal Ascot and Saratoga this summer. Pretty good company there. The horse that deserves it probably is Decisive Triumph. You look at his form, he's hit the board in four straight novice stakes this year, runs hard, puts it on the line, front runner, kind of lays it all out there, 9 years old, just tough. He's been gallant in defeat. He's made 41,000 this year and hadn't won a race, so kind of have to root for him a little bit. But good competitive race, and again, hopefully, you know, jump racing, we kick off with a send off with another strong race up here.
Take some time, Sean, and not that this needs to be, you know, revisited over and over again, but as we talked on Sunday, you were so reflective and poignant about what you are feeling and what you're going to come away from the summer thinking about and you know, resonating with you, in particular, sending the message out about doing something, and I'd love for you to index through the gamut of emotions that that were basically forced upon you over the last month.
It's just been a very challenging, tough, brutal time. I mean, I got a call from my wife, morning of the Whitney. We just finished a big paper and, gearing up for a big weekend. And wife calls me and says, the barn's burning down. I got to go. And so that was like a little after 11. And, you just feel totally helpless. You're up here in Saratoga and get a call like that. And I called my neighbor who had called me earlier in the day, right kind of before all this happened, I guess, or as it was happening. And he answered, said, everybody's out. All the horses are out. Everybody's safe. But he said, it's 100% lost. Gone. And our old bank barn built in the late 1800s, we had renovated, put all our kind of time, effort, heart, and soul into it. Just like typical horse people, we bought a property. We bought a 30-acre property because we liked the barn. And we renovated the barn first and then kind of walked up to the house and we're like, oof, this house needs work. That's just kind of how horse people do things. And so I went home, immediately after meeting that day, and was home for two and a half weeks. Came back up kind of traveling week. And, I don't know. I mean, it's just been, I really haven't been on my game. You're just trying to kind of do the best you can. As I said, Sunday, the only positive I can bring from it is the kindness that people have shown us. It's just, you realize how kind people are, and I showed up at Middleburg, and the barn was just in a big pile of rubble smoking, and you know, there's two or three neighbors there. You know, Andrew Motion's wife, Janie Covington, handed me a big Tupperware full of gazpacho that she made, you know, that afternoon. And just like that kindness was there that day and just kept, you know, keeps coming, just like friends and family and people that you didn't really know who, you didn't even know who they knew who you were, have reached out. And that part's been very touching. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily. It doesn't really make you feel that much better, but I guess it makes you feel, it doesn't make the situation any better, but I guess it makes you feel slightly better in a bad situation. It's really what it comes down to, I guess.
Well, a couple of things. I mean, for starters, you say you don't feel like you're at your best. Well, people would argue that, you know, that you've been brilliant at getting the, you know, the emotions out and basically, you know, laying bare for everybody what, you know, what has gone through your mind with each day. And one of the revelations that I really hadn't realized until you mentioned it on Sunday is that you have written that column for every single published edition of the Saratoga Special. And that is a remarkable feat, you know, one of those things that that columnists and anybody that, you know, is a journalist and that has to write those kinds of pieces would marvel at. And so under the circumstances, for you to basically, you know, hunker down and marshal up to, you know, to get the pieces out, that alone is a triumph.
I've written a column in every Saratoga Special. I wouldn't have written a good column in every Saratoga Special, but I've written a column. So it did cross my mind. I mean, I wrote the first one kind of in complete, I wrote it before I left, and it was just, I've never written a column like that. I was literally, my hands were shaking, and I was crying, and just, I felt like I just had to pour it out, and I did feel marginally better, I guess, I mean, ever so slightly marginally better. And then I just, you know, I actually crossed my mind where I wasn't going to write it the next day. And, you know, my dear brother, who's always just kind of just there for me, and he just, I don't know if I called him or he called me, but it just, it was like never. All he had to do was say, "Hey, buddy, you want to skip your column?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm not writing today." And, you know, if he just hinted at it, I don't think I would have written it. I just, you know, I as a writer, I guess, I mean, I would be, I think people would knock me, or I know they have knocked me or criticized me for how I put myself in too many columns, and they're too first person and too personal. And I think I have been guilty of that over the years. But, you know, in this situation, it was like I just didn't know how to, I really didn't know how to write something without writing about that, because there was absolutely nothing else on my mind or nothing else, you know, simply nothing else to write about. I was, you know, away from Saratoga and just staring at this giant, I mean, literally just a smoking pile of rubble that used to be our, you know, beautiful barn, you know, our muse, our, you know, our artwork, our canvas. And I just kept kind of writing about it, and I think my friends and my readers allowed me to write about it. And then I wrote one, I think 2 weeks probably afterward, I guess, and then a couple of my real allies were like, "Okay, buddy, you gotta pivot, you gotta change it." And I took that to heart. I kind of, okay, maybe I went one too many, and then I tried to write about, you know, other things the best I could. So in that respect, it's been, I guess, somewhat comforting or therapeutic to be writing. I'm not sure what. Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. I think this would have been a very different experience if it happened in April or September or December, when I didn't have that, you know, ability to kind of share it, or the the vehicle to share it and the people that have actually rallied around me. I don't know what I would have done if I just, you know, trying to power through it without the support system. So I guess in that way it was, you know, strangely good, I guess, in that respect.
Well, the one thing I was waiting for was the eggs, because to me the eggs represented, the message that you delivered on Sunday, that in a hectic world that moves way faster than it used to, there's a need or a potential and a opportunity to do something and to, you know, impact somebody else that's going through, you know, a difficult period, and those take on a million different guises.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I mentioned it on Sunday. I remember listening. I think it was something on NPR, and I kind of forget what it was, but I remember them. I said, just in an emergency situation or in someone's time of need or their crisis, just don't ask what you can do, because that just furthers their burden, because they really can't function and they don't know what to ask for, and they don't know what they need. They don't know. And so they said, just do something. And I think that I remember hearing that, and I'm not acting like I'm some saint, and I've always been there for everybody, and I've always done something. There's plenty of times when I haven't done anything for friends and family and other people, and I should have. And I just think that resonated so clearly with this, that, people just did something. And, the egg story is, guy, he's a huntsman down there at Middleburg Hunt. We know him. We're friends with him, but we've never, he's never been to dinner. We've never, he wouldn't be a close friend. And we were, Tim Keefe and I and Charles, Charles Lee, the lovely guy who helps us on the farm. The three of us were building an emergency goat shed for our little pygmy goat who was suddenly homeless. And we're out there, it's 100 degrees, and we're digging and pulling and trying to fix this thing. The guy, Richard, just walks up, and he's got a dozen eggs, and he kind of hands us the eggs. And I was talking to Charles about where to hang a fan and for the goat. And Richard said, "Well, what do you have a fan?" I said, "Yeah, we got fans." And I looked, I was like, "No, we don't have any fans. They're all gone. Just everything in the barn's gone." So he said, "What kind of fan do you need?" I said, "Well, I guess the same ones in the horse shed here next to us." And he looked around the corner. He stuck his head around the corner and he looked. And he said, "All right, I'll be back." And he came back an hour later with two fans and just put them in, set them down. And he just, he talked a little and kind of gave me a hug and he walked off. And I just thought, wow, that's what you need in life. Just people that, he brought a dozen eggs from his chickens that his wife put the dozen eggs in a crate, and he brought those, and then he ran around town and bought us two fans, and he actually also organized, we needed 2x4s, and he just ordered, I think, 6 2x4s, and they showed up in the driveway parking lot. I haven't heard from him since. He did something, and I think that's just, and something is, it can just be a call, a text, or, anything, just to kind of know that people are thinking of you. That goes a long way, and I guess that would be the only lesson I could draw from this, is just, for myself and for everybody else, just to try to do something for people in need or people that are just struggling or stressed or, going through something that's difficult. Just do something. I mean, and that something, like I said, could be just a hug, a wave, a text, a call, a dozen eggs, a couple of fans, a trough of gazpacho. I mean, anything, just whatever you can do, just do something. And I think it's important.
Well, in addition, in fact, Leslie Knopf just wrote me something interesting. She says, you mentioned the NPR. She says it was that concept that you heard was Sheryl Sandberg from her book Option B. after the death of her husband, and it was she was on and the Do Something. That's where that originates. So thanks to Leslie for that. And also,
good. I'm glad they contributed. That's good.
Yeah, she Leslie's like a sponge. I mean, she helps me with this kind of stuff all the time. She also wanted me to bring up yesterday's column, and I've got the paper sitting downstairs on the table, so I have not read it, but I see the headline: capital improvement that extends beyond doing something for people to doing something for the horses.
Yeah, I wrote that yesterday. I mean, I was just. You know, it's just hard. You look around and you just see, our horses and you think about the training facilities and you think about there's just not many places are still training horses the way we're training them in America on a very congested racetrack in a very congested area. And so I just kind of wrote a thing like just if there was some things we could do around Saratoga to try to improve the lives of our horses and really just to help them recover from races, help them get to races. And we have this big debate about Lasix, and we're kind of stuck on Lasix, and I think it's obviously a needed discussion, but along with the question of whether we should outlaw Lasix or not, or use it or not, or however, whatever you want to decide. I just think that we need to concentrate on what we can do for our racehorses to help alleviate the bleeding and help them have a better quality of life that might make them be able to run without bleeding, without getting hurt, without all the stresses. I mean, I every day I'm on the backstretch at Saratoga. I look at the Horse Haven racetrack, the little training track in the woods, they paved over it back. I don't actually think I ever galloped on it, looking back on it, but it was in the mid-80s, I guess, at some stage. I remember horses galloping around there and jogging and being on that track, but so I think somewhere in the mid-80s. But there's a little, I don't even know if it's a mile, but it's kind of in between Clare Court and the Oklahoma. And we used to take our horses over there. A lot of used to pony a lot of horses. A guy on a lead pony with a horse in the shank. And I just look at that. I think, my God, like, why did we pave over a little training track? And then you watch our horses. They literally, for a quiet day, they go back to the exact same track where they just ran or breezed. And are expected to jog around there quietly 2 miles as an easy day. I mean, if they breeze on Saturday, they walk on Sunday, and on Monday they go out and try to jog quietly on the track where they just breezed Saturday. And to me, it just always kind of boggles my mind that we don't, allow these horses more space and more quiet places to train. A stressed out horse, a nervous horse, that certainly is going to lead them to bleeding more often, or, just the quality of life and then their health and everything else. So anyway, I'm not sure there's a great answer there, but I do think if we need to concentrate on trying to improve the facilities. And I've often thought there needs to be a, equine therapy center where horses can go, and maybe they go to a hyperbaric chamber after they run and mm-hmm. help with their lungs, and salt water therapy or a vibrating floor and those kind of things that would really help horses. I think that's been lost. I mean, I just don't think we think about it enough, and I know a lot of it's obviously financially driven and space driven. I understand that, geography driven, but I think there are ways to improve our horses' lives. I mean, just the walking around on pavement, how any backstretch has pavement instead of, horse paths and dirt, is just that to me just boggles my mind. I mean, you see these horses just walking on, they're walking on metal shoes on pavement, and just, how that can possibly be good for a horse in training and, in racing, it just confounds me.
Well, and let me slip in, I with those mentions, the things that you actually laid out, I'll bring up the farm in Schuylerville, GMP Farm, that we've mentioned a few times this summer that is essentially, you know, 10 minutes from the racetrack. I mean, it's not, you can't walk them over to it, but GMP has got a hyperbaric being installed. They've got the saltwater therapy and the underwater treadmill and all of the all of those kinds of things and brand new facility. With those things in mind.
There are private facilities like that. I mean, Bruce Jackson does an amazing job at Fair Hill, and there's places like that, but. I think it needs to be a racing association, a NIRA, initiative to create such a thing. I mean, I know it'd be expensive, but it also, if you got where your horses ran more often and ran better and were able to stay sounder and run longer, and I mean, every horse is a revenue source, right? So, if you're able to provide that, I think, look, you run a horse, you get 3 vouchers to the spa, and the horse can go down there and walk down the hill where the old baseball fields where they parked the vans, and walk down there and get saltwater therapy and a hyperbaric chamber and walk home. I mean, that because again, the private centers are great, but they also frankly the people that have more money in the game are able to use those facilities, and that's great. But I don't know. I just think it just seems like it. Again, I guess my point is more that we don't even think about it. We just accept that the training facilities that we have in American racing are okay. We just think that's fine. And I stand there at Oklahoma and watch horses backing up, trying to jog backward quietly as horses are running by them the other way. And we accept that as normal, and we accept that that is okay, but it's an archaic way of training horses, and then there's not many places in the world that train horses like this, and I just don't think it's the best way to do it. I mean, you think of our equine athletes, there's no equine athlete that has fewer ways to. I mean, there's no baseball team that doesn't have, the ability to recover from injuries and games and everything else, like the horses. I mean, you can stand them in ice and you can do your own individual things, but it's still a very archaic way of taking care of our athletes.
No, that's in yesterday's paper, that capital improvement is the title, and one more issue, Sean. You got just one more column to write.
Yeah, one more tomorrow, and then not tomorrow, Saturday. So we'll come out with a Saturday edition, and then we get on the road and we head home after that. So it's been obviously a challenging meet. There've been a few highlights and a few fun moments, but personally, it's been a real challenge, and I hope everybody else had more fun and enjoyed it. Saratoga once again was it did its part, and as I kind of alluded to before, I guess in a way I'm glad I had the support system of Saratoga, and community and Saratoga friends to help somehow power through a desperate situation.
Well, there'll be new memories and a new facility, and they won't fully replace the barn, but it'll be a fresh start, and everybody, Sean, was everybody was thinking about you. So I'm particularly pleased you came back and finish out the season. It's been a great summer otherwise, and I unfortunately am not going to get to Far Hill.
Come on, man. Back the other direction or something in the fall? Or what's going on?
That does happen in October. We've got Tina got me hooked into a family thing October 15th, and I was shocked when the date came out, because I assumed, looking at the calendar, that Far Hills was going to be the 22nd, and it wasn't. So Tina's not letting me off the hook.
Well, we'll miss you as always. We'll miss you there, and we appreciate all the kind words and support of certainly steeplechasing and also flat racing. It's, like always, thanks for giving us the platform. And you know, you were very supportive of what I went through, and I appreciate that. It's just very, it was a big comfort.
No, that's too kind. Also, of course, River D Stables, and you ran one on the flat the other day, right? In that allowance race, Saranac.
Yeah, I ran one horse up here on the flat, and hope we'll get going in the fall. I kind of put away some horses for the summer, hoping that I can be good and fresh and strong in the fall. So hopefully we'll get started at Schwann Downs and maybe Belmont, Middleburg, Virginia Gold Cup, Far Hills, all those places. So hopefully we'll have a good fall, make up for a quiet summer.
Well, you've also got I'm gonna get a push maybe on Awakened coming up on is that Monday? I think Monday at Colonial.
Yeah, Awakened's in they have a $50,000 flat stake, 2 miles for horses who ran over jumps at the Colonial Downs meet but did not win over jumps. So he runs in there, deep race, 12 horses. And it's a tough race. I ran him once down there, finished second, and hopefully he can run well, and then he'll run hopefully in the fall at a few of those places that I mentioned before. But yeah, it'd be nice to have him run well on Monday.
Sean Clancy, everybody, buy Sean Clancy on your Twitter, and of course yesterday with Tom Law and Shapazian, and actually Shapazian put two more scores on the board yesterday, so he's back up by three, a little bit of breathing room with five holes to play. So keeping tabs on that as well, and we'll close out probably our Saratoga special summer season conversations with Joe next week on maybe on Labor Day. We'll get Joe live to wrap it all up in the bow. Sean, thanks so much.
Thanks, Steve, as always. Appreciate all the kindness, and keep up the great work.
Too kind. Sean Clancy, folks. Smart and frequently funny and poignant and heartfelt, always. We got about 10 minutes, and Case, let's get Rich Eng in here and see if Rich has got maybe a Del Mar and Saratoga opinion, or maybe a Kentucky Downs opinion. I've got to move the selections up to the website. I'm realizing I didn't put it up before 9 a.m. So and I also have to write out. I'm only looking at races 5 through 11 at Saratoga today. Those are the only. I knew we'd be hard pressed to get the early portion of the card done in time for 1 o'clock. Kentucky Downs kicks off at 1:25 is first post, so a little under 2 hours now. And tomorrow, Marty McGee will check in with Marty, and probably get a hold of Marcus too. Marcus is doing the lead analysis, and Marty the Hermes analysis in the Daily Racing Form. So we'll get plenty of Kentucky Downs, Scully and Schaap as well. Nick Tamaro, we'll get Nick in here for the Saratoga action. Jay Pridman, and I got to get to Brad Free. I think I've only had Brad once all summer, so we got to get Brad with some opinions as well. Usually he likes, he and Marty like the early sets. They're up early. I just retweeted from Papo, and he did the work for everybody looking at the form to win snaps on races 3, 5, 7, and 9 for Kentucky Downs. So take a look, and it's interesting. I put Social Chatter on top in race 5. They like the form to win likes Miner's Queen. I'm going to have to go back and look a little bit. Amalfi Princess, I really didn't know what to do with. They like Therapist, Max KO, and Sonoman as the top three, and I completely agree. And those were my three as well in the seventh. And then in the ninth, where I've struggled mightily to make decisions, Newsworthy, who I'm going to have to go back and look at, and Mega City, I thought was okay, and In Love, who you have to respect, Peace Achieved, the Norm Cassie, Floriform. In fact, Floriform is coming out of the same race I guess Atone Scratched, huh? Did Atone Scratched. How about that? Did I get that right? Rich Ang is with us. Rich, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Rich, Rich, it occurs to me, I mean, since we're reaching you in Vegas, Alan Dinkinson, did you have, you must have come across Dink plenty of times.
You know, he was someone I never met personally. We actually had a couple of things back and forth on Twitter. But I never had a chance to meet him, but I've seen some of the comments, some of the testimonials from people that did know him, and he looks like he must have been one sweetheart of a fella, and I'm kind of sad that I never did get a chance to meet Dink.
Well, I occurred to me, you know, knowing that you overlapped in Vegas this last little while. Well, Rich, we are on the doorstep here to wrap up the Saratoga summer. We've got five cards left, and we'll have the Sunday card, including the spinaway as part of the Sunday action. Then the hopeful, they'll draw tomorrow for the Monday for the Labor Day. And then you got the big weekend at Del Mar. Anything you want to kind of slip in here as we hurtle toward the end of the summer?
Well, a couple things. One is that Del Mar does not close on Labor Day. They actually run another week, so they'll be closing on Sunday the 11th. So that's just a heads up for folks. And with the Kentucky Downs meet starting today, I've been doing a Kentucky Downs and a Keeneland sheet since 2017. So, you know, I used to work at Turfway Park for many, many years, was familiar with Keeneland and familiar with Kentucky Downs when it started as dueling grounds. I was there at the beginning. Making the road trip down to Franklin, Kentucky. So it's really a unique place, a unique course, and the purses. Well, you know, they it's unbelievable to see the kind of money that people are running for.
Big time. We got about 3 minutes. Slip in a Kentucky Downs play, a Saratoga, a Del Mar for today.
Yeah, I'll give two picks, one for Kentucky Downs and one for Del Mar off my sheet, Steve. I heard you just before I came on, you were talking about the seventh race at Kentucky Downs. That happens to be what I consider my best bet of the day. I really love the one Therapist coming in from Christophe Clement. And, you know, one thing about Kentucky Downs is that because of the uniqueness of the course, there's a couple things you should be looking for as a handicapper. One is horses for courses that have run well there in the past, and also certain trainers point for the meet, Mike Maker, Wesley Ward, Kenny McPeak, and then when I see these New York trainers like Chad Brown and Christophe Clement coming in with some New York horses, that's a good sign, and New York horses, to me, is the best turf racing in the country, so I really like the one Therapist in the seventh race as far as a Kentucky Downs pick. And moving over to Del Mar, let's go to the second race, Steve. The second race is a mile on the main track. And to me, an incredible example of lone speed has got to be the one, Coalina. I know this horse is a little faint-hearted at times, but I see this horse galloping alone in front, and Edwin Maldonado is one of the top jockeys as far as nursing a speed horse along. So in race number two at Del Mar, I like number one, Coalina, to be low and early speed and go wire to wire.
Well, she's co-second choice, too, because Lily Babe for Kristen Mulhall is the favorite at 2-1, and then She's a Joker, Peter Miller, is also 5-2. So not the favorite by any means. And Louis Mendez, this isn't a baby. The Louis Mendez Express that Rick Hammerly clued everybody in years ago about being ready when Mendez starts popping the 2-year-olds, but capable with any kind of horse. Excellent. And then with Therapist, Therapist is obviously the horse to beat. I'll tell you what, Rich, if Therapist doesn't win that race, there's another five horses that could. I mean, it's that's Kentucky Downs in a nutshell.
Yeah, and I heard you mentioning some of the others. I guess I'll throw in a, another one if you had not mentioned this horse. But I thought the 11 endorsed at 15-1 was an interesting horse. Very little turf experience, but certainly has the kind of resume that you like to see. A lot of stakes races, a lot of class races. Mike Maker, as we talked about, good closing style. This is an interesting spot for the 11 endorsed at a big price.
Well, and, you know, I give Joe Kristofek a lot of credit for a very clever insight where he mentioned, you know, because there's not going to be turf at the Churchill Fall Meet, that we may be seeing some horses where you're going to have to make some guesses because they're you know, they're horses that, you know, they're going to put them on the grass here, you know, and there's no choice if you know, if races were to rain off like they would at a Churchill, for instance, and you know, horses that entered and if the race goes on grass, fine, but if it gets rained off, even better, because you get to go on either a fast track or a wet track. So I don't know. I think there might be some mystery horses today that, you know, not just today, but through these seven cards that we're going to end up scratching our head a little bit afterward.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting to hear that you're talking about what Joe said. It makes sense. And I think some of these trainers are probably going to end up being pleasantly surprised if they find out who they thought a dirt horse actually likes the grass and opens up a new opportunity in the condition book for them moving forward.
Well, and, you know, it's funny, endorsed, it's funny that endorsed shows up in here. I talked earlier about the runner, about the baby in the fourth race. Well, endorsed happens to be a sibling, an older brother of Cody's Wish, for those that didn't know
goodness.
That.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's Cody's older brother.
I love that. We get the class with the pedigree and... it's worth following the family trees on some of these horses.
Always, especially when it comes to these two-year-olds. Rich Ang, everybody, racedaylasvegas.com for Rich's analysis. Rich, we'll wrap up Del Mar next week with you and summarize Saratoga. I want to thank, of course, the parade of tributes to Dinky as Jason Beam and Beth Raymer, the Maven, Dave. Good friend, and Paul Matisse all joined us. Dick Powell earlier, and Joey Kay as well, and Sean Clancy. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you in the morning from Saratoga.
Cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and...